And why are we going to talk about El Salvador?
Because I went to Bitcoin Beach.
What? All right. Well, look, if you're going to the halving party in El Salvador, you need to hit us up.
Your Bitcoin stack is going to be worth so much that like you won't mind spending anything. It is too hot in El Zante. Like it is.
Oof.
It is hot. I've literally paid for everything in this town with Bitcoin.
It's Mandana.
And Ian.
Welcome to Flirting with Bitcoin.
Season 3.
That's right. 3 years ago, I tricked Ian into a weekly date night.
I let you trick me so I could teach you about Bitcoin.
Well, it worked. I'm very excited for the halving.
You should be. Bitcoin's about to do what Bitcoin's about to do.
Ooh, okay then. Kian, can we start the show?
Okay. Let's go.
Hey, babe.
Hey, Mandana.
We're back.
We are back.
Did you miss us?
We missed y'all.
We missed you so much.
Well, maybe we just missed talking into microphones.
These are really nice microphones.
When you have nice tools, you kind of want to use them. So let's use them.
I know. Let's use them to kick off season 3 of the Flirting with Bitcoin podcast. Can I get a sound effect? Aw, babe. That just made me so happy. Look how far we've come.
Yeah.
So Ian had this great idea to name our seasons. Also, he had this great idea for us to have seasons.
Yeah, I mean, we're TV people. We used to watch a lot of TV, not so much anymore.
Thanks a lot, Keon.
We'll splice in Keon there. You know, the podcast itself, I think, tracks your journey into Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And so the seasons, I feel like, reflect your growth into not so much Bitcoin as a whole, but just like understanding the mechanics of it.
Flirting with it.
Flirting with it, right. And so season 1 was really internalizing what Bitcoin is. In Bitcoin, there's a term for the first block of Bitcoin called the Genesis block. So season 1 is Genesis. Season 2, the bear. You know, this the second year of the podcast, we saw the price crash from $69,000 to $15,000. I'm sure you've never even paid attention to the stock market close enough to see that kind of drop in anything.
Nope.
So I'm sure that kind of made you question.
But I still held. I still held,
you
baby.
You had no choice. You had no choice.
So yeah, we experienced the bear market.
And now season 3 is the halving. It is your first halving.
I'm so excited.
We've been kind of hyping it for 2 years.
So yeah, babe, what are we going to talk about today?
So today, to kick off season 3, we're going to talk about El Salvador.
And why are we going to talk about El Salvador?
Because I went to Bitcoin Beach.
Before we get into that, let's say hi to our listeners. Hola, Spain.
Namaskara, Nepal.
Guten Tag, Germany.
Hola, Brazil.
Sawadee, Thailand.
G'day, UK.
G'day, Canada.
Hola, Argentina.
Buongiorno, Italy.
Namaste, Bharat, aka India.
Kamusta, Philippines.
Bonjour, France.
Hola, Portugal.
Hello, Indonesia.
Hello, Netherlands.
Konnichiwa, Japan.
Witam, Poland.
Zadrivet, Bulgaria.
Hola, Venezuela.
Good day, Australia.
Hola, Mexico.
Hello, Nigeria.
And howdy to Texas. What time is it, babe?
Right now, the current time is 831-474, and we're approximately 7,990 blocks since our last recording.
It's been a minute.
Been a minute. And we're less than 10,000 blocks away from the halving, approximately 8,526.
Ooh,
it's getting close.
I was to give you $1, how many acres could I get on sunny Bitcoin Island?
Today, you could get 1,951 acres, aka Satoshis.
That's a little less than I'm used to. It's a lot less than I'm used to. It used to be like 4,000.
Yeah, when we stopped recording, we were in the close to 3,000 to 4,000.
Dang. All right. And what about the price of other things like eggs, beef, gas, milk?
Yeah, I mean, since we've been gone, obviously the price of Bitcoin has rallied. The ETFs had a big part to play in that. Since we're sitting at around $50,000 per Bitcoin at the moment, literally across the board, everything has gotten cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
So again, pushing that idea of if you live on a Bitcoin standard, everything gets cheaper for you. Eggs are 6,200 Satoshis a dozen. Beef is 6,600 satoshis for a kilogram of beef. Gas is 4,600 satoshis for a gallon. And milk is 29,000 satoshis for 100 pounds of milk, because that's how they weigh.
I love that you have to give that clarification every time.
I have to, because otherwise someone listening for the first time would be like, why is so expensive?
There's some fancy cows.
But when you take that into account from our last recording, since we recorded our last episode, the Satoshi price index is down 14.7%.
So we're just rolling in it. We're rolling in milk.
If you turn on the news, people will say everything's getting more expensive. Mm-hmm. But in a month, things got almost 15% cheaper for Bitcoiners.
In your heart, like, is your love for Bitcoin just soaring?
I don't have love for Bitcoin.
You know what I mean. All right, now let's get to a little housekeeping. So my boo, the star that he is, was on another podcast. He was so good. You have to go listen to the episode. I'm sorry. I'm like fangirling over here. Like also, you guys have no idea how cute Ian is. But if you watch this video, you'll finally see, like, he's just such a cutie. And it was just really fun hearing you, get interviewed by other people at a podcast. They did a really good job. I'm like, I should take some notes.
Those guys, they do a purely interview podcast. So I think they've gotten good at interviewing
really
people.
Really good at it, yeah.
I enjoyed that interview because you kind of knew most of the things that I said in that interview. But to tell the story to other people and it's fresh to them and see their like natural reaction to some of those things.
It was really cool.
We'll put a link in the description of the show, but the podcast itself is called High Hash Rate. If you go to their website right now, we're probably like the second or third episode away from whatever's out right now, because we'll be a delay from when we publish. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing for housekeeping. Other thing for housekeeping is, you know, season two, we were using Fountain and we were sending 1% of all donations to Sparrow Wallet. We turned that off. We're going to be working out something else this year. I don't know yet, but that's off. So if anyone like hears an older episode and thinks like, I thought they said they were donating to Sparrow, like, we're not donating anymore. Big news is that we have a merch store.
Ooh.
And Mandana designed our first official t-shirt for the show. So go check it out. It's at store.flirtingwithbitcoin.com.
It's season three swag. So it doesn't have to just be on a t-shirt, but we designed something to kind of, you know, celebrate the three seasons. And hopefully it's, you know, if you want it, you can buy it, you can wear it. And if people ask you about it, you know, you don't have to explain Bitcoin to them. You can tell them, hey, you know, here's the podcast if you're trying to learn something.
Yeah, we're trying not to put it in their face. It's more of a conversation starter. Like, what is the having?
Yeah.
That's a good, you know, maybe we'll put that on a shirt. What is the having?
There's other stuff that we want to put out, though, like in hopes, of course, just to, you know, get people to say like, hey, what is that? What does that mean? You know, Ian wears his Bitcoin hats all the time. And people will always say, what's that logo? What's that supposed to be? And then, you know, it always opens the door for you to be able to talk about Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's doesn't catch most people's attention, but when it does catch someone's attention, that's like a good conversation starter for sure.
Yeah, so that's, you know, a fun thing. Check it out. We'll love you forever if you buy one. Next up, babe, like the most exciting thing, because we are going on vacation without our kid, is the halving party.
Yeah, it's coming up first week of April. Unfortunately, it looks like we will not be there during the halving.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, the halving,
I guess,
yeah,
fine.
It's a party. Yeah. We'll all be there. But the halving itself is looking more ironically like it's going to be on 420. So
okay.
Bitcoiners are going to be
A few weeks later. Like two weeks later. Okay.
So, you know, 420 and Bitcoin kind of goes together. Hence the podcast interview that I just did, the High Hash Rate podcast.
I didn't know that.
What?
The cultures mix a lot.
I think that the Venn diagram sense.
I guess.
Yeah, there's overlap.
Yeah, I mean, of course, we're going to talk about Bitcoiners later.
But also, like, yeah. I think you kind of have to be a person that smokes weed to get Bitcoin.
Really?
Yeah.
Your brain needs to chill out.
I don't know so much like chill out, like your brain chill out. I just think that there's a lot of people that were told in the 80s that drugs are bad. And there's a lot of people today that are being told Bitcoin is bad.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. So, FUD.
Yeah, FUD.
All right. Well, look, if you're going to the halving party in El Salvador, you need to hit us up because, one, we don't know anyone that's going to be there, like not on a personal level. So if you're going, like, we would love to connect. And also, if you end up going and you see us, like, come say hi. Like, I'm just very excited. you know, I'm never around Bitcoiners ever. So it's just going to be such an interesting experience.
Yeah, I think you're going to do fine.
Yeah.
I think you're going
to. I can hold my own in conversations.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
I'll be like Lightning Network nodes.
yes and no. I think a lot of people, so there is a group chat, for the having party, the actual having party that we're going to. It was on Telegram. It got moved to this thing called Keet.
Oh, okay.
So I got like this app called Keet on my phone now. It is what it is, but
another dating app.
Yeah. Another dating app. But the point is that like, a lot of people that are going, this is their first time in El Salvador. And a lot of them, I think it's like their first time meeting up with Bitcoiners in real person. So one of the things I would say to that is like, I think everyone's just going to be really excited to be in El Salvador.
Mm-hmm.
And like Bitcoin is going to be just the backdrop. I don't think it's going to be as like Bitcoin intensive. You're not like going to a
conference
or like a Bitcoin meetup in Austin where like all the hardcore Bitcoin developers are.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. These are just people who are like,
yeah, it's a lot of people
trying
like
to celebrate Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, really?
Plus, if you think about it, right? Like,
I love
okay,
to party. You keep saying it's going to be a party.
7 or 8 weeks. Like, that's a lot of days of ETF buying. So I think there's going to be a lot of Bitcoiners that are flush.
You really think it's going to go up by then? I mean, yeah, I ask you these questions and you're like, it's possible.
I mean, we're not talking about the ETFs or anything in this episode, but mm-hmm. all I'm saying is that the ETFs are buying 10 times as many Bitcoin as are produced every day.
Wow.
So like you can't sustain that without the price going up. So we don't know where it's going to go, but I'm willing to bet that it's going to be above 50,000.
So you think people are just going to be like spraying champagne on each other going crazy?
No, but I think that like, for example, if I were going to El Salvador, knowing what I know, I would load up about $500 to $1,000 in cash on Strike. That would just be my spending money. Everyone there, if you're a Bitcoiner, your Bitcoin stack is going to be worth so much that like you won't mind spending anything. Mm-hmm. And things in El Salvador are cheaper.
Well, good for El Salvador. They're going to really benefit.
Oh, yeah. They're going to make some serious money in the month of April.
Interesting.
Like, I don't know if they do GDP per month, but I'm sure El Salvador's April GDP is going to be like 20%. For example, these Bitcoiners in this group chat are trying to organize helicopter tours. They're trying to get a helicopter from the airport to the hotel.
I know. And like, I'm definitely trying to be the supportive wife that I am. And I'm like, oh, I guess, yeah, Ian, if that's the experience that you want when we go, we can do that. And Ian was like, no, that's ridiculous. We are not spending money on that.
I mean, it's ridiculous, but I think people are doing
it. Yeah, people are doing it.
So like they're already feeling excited. And that's kind of like if you know what Bitcoin is and the halving is coming and the price has been going mm-hmm. up and there's this $200 million a day in buying in the ETF, like why wouldn't I book a helicopter? Basically, Bitcoin's going to pay for it.
Sure.
So Bitcoin's paying for everyone to go to El Salvador.
Hey, it's Mandana. We're in season 3, The Halving, and I'm making sure we drop a new episode every week. We are dreaming big for flirting with Bitcoin, and the only thing standing in our way is time and money. Let me be transparent and talk real numbers. Through Value for Value, our listeners directly paid us 100,000 sats in season 1. Season 2, we made 1 million sats. Of course, now we gotta see if we can 10x again and reach 10 million sats this season. Hashtag relationship goals. If we earn 10 million sats from the work we put into this podcast, it'll be the sign that one of us can do this part-time, maybe even full-time. Send us Bitcoin or shop our merch store. It all helps with the goal. You can also give us an old school shout out on social. Listen to us on your favorite podcasting 2.0 app or make and share clips of the show. Your support in any form is value we appreciate. Go to flirtingwithbitcoin.com/support and let's experience value for value together. So you went to El Salvador.
I did.
And you've already told me about it. We're going to be very transparent. I did not go with Ian, but I did not wait until recording to ask him about it. There's a lot to cover
mm-hmm.
and you've downloaded already on me, but I'm sure there's things that you haven't even remembered to tell me. But I will say, like, the most interesting thing that you told me that, like, I feel like I physically took a step back was, I'm going to let you say it.
I don't know what you're talking
You don't know
about.
What it is? Oh, it's that there aren't a lot of Bitcoiners in El Salvador.
Yeah, that's true.
That's nuts to me.
I understand why it's nuts to you, but I also was not surprised.
Yeah.
You know, the problem that Bitcoin solves is a problem that El Salvador has. Mm-hmm. And so specifically Bitcoin Beach was an experiment, you know, it was like, can Bitcoin solve this problem in El Salvador? Mainly the use case of unbanked people. When you have a problem of banking and you bring in a new banking technology that's also being FUDded to death, I was not surprised that most people there are kind of like, meh.
I thought it was interesting. Most people that you met were not Bitcoiners.
The colloquial name for the place is Bitcoin Beach. The El Salvadorian name is El Zonte. There are people there that are just on vacation at a beach. Mm-hmm. They don't know that it's called Bitcoin Beach. Mm-hmm. There's El Salvadorians that are at that beach. They don't know that it's called Bitcoin Beach. There's a guy who I met who had flown in from, he lives in America. He lives in Long Island. He's an El Salvadorian. He brings his family there to go on vacation.
Yes, you have to tell the story. This guy came down to vote.
He came down to vote for Bukele, yes.
Yes, but he was not aware of Bitcoin.
He's aware of Bitcoin, but the person that he knows that was giving him the information.
The one person.
I mean, I don't know how many people are giving him information. Yeah. The one person that he told me about was basically telling him that it wasn't good.
Yeah, and another El Salvadorian that lived in New Jersey or something.
The person who was telling him this?
Correct.
They lived in California.
Ah.
And they were actually in the process of driving to El Salvador because they were moving to El Salvador. And while I was talking to this guy, that person called him. Mm-hmm. And so he answers the phone and he's just like, hey, like, I'm sitting here. And he said El Zonte. And he was like, did you know this is called Bitcoin Beach? Like, that was like the first thing out of his mouth. So like, there you go.
Yeah.
He didn't know. He didn't know where he was, but only Bitcoiners know that it's Bitcoin Beach.
I think that's so fascinating because it was Bitcoin Beach long before Bitcoin became legal tender in El Salvador.
Technically, yes.
Right. It was like a use case, right? Yeah. Case study, whatever you want to call it.
Long before, but definitely before.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you had very interesting insights to why you were not surprised. You already knew that, you know, El Salvador did not have a lot of Bitcoiners because, you know, you had researched El Salvador before going there. But I mean, I guess maybe you had told that to me before, but I was very surprised that it felt like the same way you talked about going to another Bitcoin meetup. That's what you even said. You said it was like going to a Bitcoin meetup anywhere. Wasn't a lot of people. You went to a Bitcoin event.
No. I would like to, if that's what you took away from that statement, I would like to clear that up. On one of the days, I went up to San Salvador from Bitcoin Beach. And San Salvador is the capital of El Salvador. And there was a Bitcoin meetup there. And it wasn't really a Bitcoin meetup exclusively, but it was in El Salvador, they have this program called Kubo Plus, where they're teaching El Salvadorians about Bitcoin and stuff like that. And so it was a Kubo Plus meetup, which is basically a Bitcoin meetup. That was great. That was the best Bitcoin meetup I've ever been to. Because those, I talked to a couple people there, but I would just say in general, those were people that were kind of like got the hard and fast download of Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. So it's a really quick course. I think it was like 6 or 8 weeks. And one of the guys said, I went in knowing nothing. And he comes out the other side with like an internship and like a job. But like, he was like, it was a lot, right? Like, they pushed a lot of information into us, but they were excited. Because it's like, once you understand what Bitcoin is, you're like, yeah, this is the thing. They can see the problem that it's solving for them in their country. Number one, it gives a lot of opportunity. Bitcoin meetups here in America, especially in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. like, you probably don't have the problems that Bitcoin solves.
So it's not as exciting.
It's not as exciting. We kind of sit around and talk about what's going on in the world. No one's sitting there really saying, like, Bitcoin got me a job.
But, you know, that is still a small subset of the El Salvadorian population. Most of them are not seeing Bitcoin for what Bitcoiners see it as.
Sure. And that's going to take time. It's going to take time to educate people. Obviously, right now, Bitcoin is highly distributed around the planet. So if you're a Bitcoiner, wherever you are, you're probably in the less than 1%. Not like wealth, just like people who know about Bitcoin. Thing that I think we can kind of describe what's going on in El Salvador with Bitcoin in one sentence is that, and this was what I learned at that Cubo Plus meetup, is that in the US, Bitcoin is not the government, right? So if you're a Bitcoiner in the United States, you're like, ah, screw the Fed. I'm moving all my money into Bitcoin. Like, ah, I'm out.
Probably a libertarian.
Sure. But like, you're just, it's an anti-government move. But in El Salvador, since it's the government that actually like kind of promoted and pushed Bitcoin, Bitcoin is perceived as something that the government is doing. And I don't care what country you're in, you probably don't trust the government up to a certain point.
I think that's so fascinating.
So like that point, I forget who made that point to me, but someone made that point to me and I was like, oh yeah, I didn't think about it like that. Sure. If Joe Biden came on TV tomorrow and was pushing Bitcoin on me,
would you reconsider everything?
No, I know what it is, but if it was something brand new,
no.
So like there's that heavy level of skepticism. Also, full transparency, like the rollout of Bitcoin in El Salvador was not smooth.
Can you talk about that? Like, what did people tell you about that?
No one told me anything. I watched it from outside. Mm-hmm. In order to kind of jumpstart Bitcoin, the government gave everyone in the country $30, and they put that $30 in a Bitcoin wallet called Chivo. So Chivo is like the official state-sponsored Bitcoin wallet, mm-hmm. which those words shouldn't go together.
Yeah.
State-sponsored Bitcoin wallet, that doesn't make sense, especially in America where you have Elizabeth Warren trying to make Bitcoin wallets illegal. So again, in America, Bitcoin is not the government. In El Salvador, the government's like, here's a Bitcoin wallet, use it.
Yeah.
On top of that,
Bizarro world or upside down world.
Exactly. On top of that, like, it didn't work. Any new piece of software doesn't work. And you're trying to roll out this thing to the entire country. It's like, okay, yeah, maybe everyone has a cell phone, but they had like ATMs. People would put money in the ATM, they'd lose it. I think I saw one that, I mean, might be hyperbole, but I doubt it. Like, someone lost like $10,000. So like that wasn't smooth, didn't instill a lot of confidence. And then when you actually dig into like, okay, well, who's actually getting paid? Like, who did the government pay to make this? Like, it appears to be some back scratching going on.
Mm-hmm.
And for me personally, I just expect all things government related to be back scratching at some level. But in El Salvador, like, that's even worse there because they're still dealing with the ramifications of like a civil war.
Mm-hmm.
It required a level of trust in the government that I don't think anyone should have in the government. And so when the government comes out and says, there's this thing called Bitcoin, we're going to use it and everyone should use it, and here's $33. Okay, maybe the $33 would have pushed you over the edge of like trust. But then when it doesn't work, you're like, okay, another government thing that doesn't work. Then on top of that, the price of Bitcoin goes down.
Insult to injury.
Yeah, the type of price of Bitcoin goes down.
Yeah.
So that $30 that was sitting in their wallet, even if they were being a responsible person and didn't spend it, it goes down to 15.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, well, what's this thing? You said 30, now it's 10.
Yeah.
I think it just had a really bad rollout. That being said, I don't think they could have done it any different. Unfortunately, it required something like Chivo, regardless of how it came out the door, because the free market would have never been able to coordinate as fast as a unified thing.
That's very interesting, babe, that you say that.
I'm not saying that the free market would not have made something happen.
Yeah.
But by putting the word Chivo into everyone's mouth, whether it works or it doesn't, everyone's speaking the same language.
I have so many thoughts about this, but I want you to talk a little bit more about like Bukele's role in, and how it relates to people's conviction in Bitcoin.
Well, I mean, again, I learned a little bit of history while I was there, so I don't want to speak as though like I've known this all along, but there is a healthy dose of skepticism for even Bukele. There are stories and things coming out that make people look at him a certain way. And again, he gets elected. The government starts making all these changes. If you were a person who was benefiting from the previous system and he's trying to change the system to not to your benefit, well, then of course you're going to rally your people to try to paint him in a certain light. Then he kind of put his name behind Bitcoin and Chivo, and he was talking about it a lot. So when you put your name behind something and the thing doesn't work,
mm-hmm.
or people ask questions like, well, where is all the Bitcoin? And I'll be honest, I don't think he's really answered that question.
Oh, really?
I mean, again.
Well, should he be answering that question? It's also like a vulnerability.
It doesn't have to be a vulnerability, okay. Right? Like very easily, the government of El Salvador could have a Bitcoin wallet address that they publish and say, this is where all the Bitcoin is. That's not hard to do. My guess is that where the Bitcoin is not, that's not possible. I think over time, if Bitcoin does work, the people will start demanding stuff. But right now, because of the lack of education of Bitcoin in the country, the people themselves can't really demand that because they don't understand what it is.
And the people that do understand it are trying to like work alongside the efforts to like build the infrastructure of the Bitcoin economy.
So you're not going to like ruffle the feathers or whatever. There's a lot of things El Salvador could be doing better when it comes to the Bitcoin implementation. But when you're trying to fight a battle against IMF and like the global powers that be and how they control the world through money printing and debt. I don't know if it's like his cousin or something that like was like involved with Chivo, but like paying your cousin to build an app is like the least of our concerns.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not trying to equivocate.
It's hard to not. Right. Look, you're rooting for him. So it's probably a little hard for you to be critical of him.
Yeah. But that being said, I don't use Chivo.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. Like the free market.
You didn't have to. You had other options. So I'm like, saying the El Salvadorians also had other options.
They have other options. But again, the education is missing. And this is what I was getting at. It would have been a lot harder to tell everybody Bitcoin's legal tender. You can use whatever wallet you want.
What's a wallet?
What is that? So like those are your two options. You don't provide anything or you provide a thing. No one's forced to use it. Everyone could use Strike. Maybe not on day one, but like everyone could use Strike.
Today.
Or everyone could use, there's a wallet that's very popular there called Blink. Like I saw plenty of people not using Chivo.
You had another really interesting insight too around like, you know, why is it that El Salvadorians are not like majority getting what Bitcoin is? And you were saying that it has to do with, you know, Bukele could only have one term. And so it wasn't really clear what was next.
When he was first elected, the rule in El Salvador is that a president can only sit for one term. Then when it was coming close to the end of his one term, you know, people started asking the question of like, well, what's going to happen to Bitcoin? And so, you know, they changed some rules up and he was allowed to run again. But actually, one of my friends, he was kind of like anti-Bukele because of that. Right. He was like, oh, look, they're going to change the rules so this guy can be president forever or run again and be president forever.
I've talked about this.
But what they actually did was that he had to step down. So you can't be in that position and be running for election at the same time. So technically, when he got elected, he was not president. He was a private citizen.
That's running. An interesting loophole.
Loophole, whatever. That was the compromise. Right. Maybe he'll lose. Right.
So he's saying, OK, I'll step down. And if the people really don't want me, like I'm gone.
Sure. Now, what I would say is that, yes, that was a rule change. So it appears like they changed the rules mm-hmm. for him to run again. And my friend's argument was that, you know, this is written in their constitution. They're just going to change the constitution. I was like, yes, constitutions were meant to be changed.
Point. Yes. Living document.
The living document. Changing it to your benefit. That's debatable. But like, they're supposed to be changed. We haven't changed ours in like forever. And you see where we are.
And why is it that theirs is right for them, but like two is right for us. Two terms is right for us. This is just arbitrary.
Sure. So his reelection wasn't guaranteed. And that also brings like, okay, you're going to bring something in. Your buddies are going to make money off of it. And then you'll go. And then somebody else will bring in something else. Right. So what he did during his time in office was they got a lot of laws passed that would lead a rational person to think that, well, Bitcoin is here to stay. They're giving a lot of benefits to Bitcoin companies. So like they're coming mm-hmm. and he just got reelected and there's a lot of accusations of voting irregularities and stuff like that. That being said, he got like 85-90% of the vote. So
also you did tell me that everyone you talked to said they voted for him.
I didn't meet a single person who didn't vote for him. Like everyone I talked to voted for him. Like I said, this guy flew from Long Island mm-hmm. to come vote for him. I just kind of compare what just happened in their system to our system, which they're technically emulating, right? Elections, presidents, like that's the United States' mm-hmm. model. Our election right now is poised to have two people that are almost 80 years old running for president of the United States. I don't even know how old Bukele is, but he ain't 80.
He's our age.
I don't even know.
He's a millennial.
It doesn't matter. He's not 80.
Yeah.
And so that system was able to produce someone who's young running for office. That's great.
But what if that means for the next 50 years, he's going to stay in office?
Look, I'll say an unpopular opinion. Dictators get stuff done. Benevolent, malicious, whatever. Dictators get stuff done. Everyone loves to talk about the Roman Empire. And everyone likes to talk about how, you know, Caesar tried to take over and be a dictator. But a lot of people don't know the history of the Roman Empire. And I'm just going to give a quick history lesson.
Before, lay it down, baby.
Before Julius Caesar became Caesar and did what he all know that he did, he was at the long end of a bunch of other people. Julius Caesar was not the first. He was the last. 60 or 80 years before him, there was a guy named Sulla. Sulla was actually a dictator. The Roman Senate gave him the title and they said, you are in charge until you die. When he died, his two lieutenants were names you might know, Pompey and Crassus. Crassus was considered the richest man in Rome, and Pompey was the guy with the military. And as soon as Crassus died, he said, or as he was dying, he told them, like, nobody else should be dictator. Like, this was a bad idea. It's going to destroy the Republic, right? Okay. The minute that dude died, Pompey and Crassus are fighting. Because they're like, nah, he's gone. Like, I want to be in charge next. It was Caesar who came in and said, no, I'm in charge. And then they killed him. And that's kind of how the story goes. But who came after Caesar was his nephew, Augustus. Everything that people talk about that Caesar did, it was actually Augustus. Augustus is the one who built out Rome into, like, the empire that we all talk about. Caesar didn't do that. It was Augustus. There is a spot where it's like you can be in such a bad position that you need someone to be in power for longer than 4 years or 5 years. You just can't fix certain problems.
But you were just saying that person was a dictator for a long time and he was like, this is a bad idea. It's going to lead to our downfall.
Yes, but it was the only way to keep the Republic. So this is like the message from Sulla from the past is that, yes, sometimes this needs to happen. Because before that, okay, just to put things into perspective, before Sulla was dictator, there were literally like mass murders in Rome of like 10,000 people at a time. So like one side got in charge, they killed off everybody. Then the other side got in charge and they killed the other person, other group. This went on for like 50 to 100 years. Like, it was bad. You need someone to come in and say, like, we're going to clean this up. I'm not saying that that's right. But what I'm saying is that if you know the history of El Salvador, which I learned a lot more when I was there, but I was also just like, I've been researching it for a while. Like, they've been in a civil war for like 20 to 30 years. It's only going to end with one side winning and then you can rebuild. If you have the other side still trying to fight you,
yeah,
you're not going to actually be able to rebuild. It sucks. It really does suck. If you think democracy is the only way to get stuff done, you are wrong. There are more examples in history of one person having all the power and getting stuff done.
But you know what you were saying is now that Bukele has been reelected, the people of El Salvador know that they have a little bit more stability to build a foundation for their country.
They have more stability and they can at least assume that this thing, Bitcoin, is going to be around for another 5 years, which means people hypothetically like myself can look at El Salvador and say, hey, maybe I'll go there for 5 years, maybe I'll build a business there, right? You see people now being confident in investing in El Salvador. If you have that instability, investment's not going to come, right? There's a lot of things that come with stability. And I'm not even trying to get involved in El Salvadorian politics. This is just my personal opinion. The people that are trying to like get rid of Bukele, if they are successful in that, they will lose all the investment that's coming to the country. And then guess what? They'll be right back borrowing money from the IMF and doing exactly what they've been doing for the last 20 years, which has not been working. So like, that's literally the alternative that they're trying to promote.
I just wonder if like the people of El Salvador really understand that.
Well, what the people of El Salvador understand is that, which was constantly said, is that, oh, we wouldn't be doing this 3 years ago.
Yes, I completely understand that. But I just think about what that means for Bitcoin adoption overall around the world. If I live in a country where it's not legal tender and there isn't a lack of banking infrastructure, right? All of those things that you're describing for El Salvador, it's going to be really hard to get the average person to really understand Bitcoin.
I think it's hard to get the average person to understand Bitcoin regardless of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of things that are just working against Bitcoin in El Salvador's, or working against Bitcoin's favor in El Salvador. That being said, when an El Salvadorian does get it, they can benefit almost immediately, right? Because there are a large number of external Bitcoiners that are coming there and they want to spend their Bitcoin. So if you cater to them, there's a lot of money to be made.
Yeah, that's true. Right? There's like a whole industry that you could be the only offering.
Exactly.
On. Yeah. It's just really fascinating to me because of course I want people to understand Bitcoin and especially people in our lives, right? We talk about this a lot. Like we would love to help them understand so that they can help themselves. If you're a Bitcoiner, you're following other Bitcoiners out on the internet for the most part, right? And there are all these things happening, you know, the ETF, there's all these signs that are showing that like the money people are getting it.
Mm-hmm.
And as Ian has declared, it's the end of FUD.
Yeah. I mean, the people that were FUDing are now in it. So it would work against them, their own interest to FUD it now.
Yeah. So end of FUD, all of those things, it almost feels like this is it. Like you got to get Bitcoin now. You're never going to be able to get Bitcoin, right? But we're still so early.
Well, yes and no. Fundamentally, yes, we're still early because, you know, if you're literally just talking about the price is always going to be relative to the amount of money that they print, and they don't show any sign of stopping printing. So the price of Bitcoin is probably only going to appreciate. That's number one. When it comes from like adoption and being so early, it's complicated. And I don't deny that it's complicated, right? You could try to understand all of it, or you can just try to find how it improves your life in one way, right? And I'll give a great example. This is one of the things that the example that I kept giving when I was in El Salvador trying to explain to these El Salvadorians that didn't get Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Like what?
I can't believe that you were in El Salvador explaining how great Bitcoin is to El Salvadorians who use it as legal tender.
Not all of them do, though.
You're right. It's an option.
Most don't.
Oh, okay.
Right? Most don't because it's just an option. And so if you don't have to change anything, why would I change? Right? Mm. So like, for example, I paid for the hotels with Bitcoin, mm-hmm. right? Okay. Or I paid for, you know, everything with Bitcoin. I actually didn't spend any dollars when I was there. Hey gang, it's Ian. Let's chat for a second. Bitcoiner or not, I know we're all feeling anxious to save more money lately. But do you want to know why you're feeling that way? It's because you're still thinking in fiat. Seeing the price of everything go up in your local currency, that's what's driving you crazy. That's where all this anxiety is coming from. Meanwhile, the reality is everything is actually getting cheaper on Bitcoin Island. And you might ask yourself, how do I get to Bitcoin Island? Simple. Bitcoin Island is just a state of mind, and you need to train your brain to think in Bitcoin. Your first training exercise is to set a Bitcoin goal using the Satoshi Savings Calculator made by yours truly. And your goal should be to always have more Bitcoin today than you did yesterday. It's literally that simple. This way, the amount of Bitcoin you have only goes up. And once you start to think in Bitcoin, over time, everything around you becomes cheaper. You'll be way more confident about the future. No more anxiety. Look, we don't need to overcomplicate this. You're still early, but you gotta be strategic. And you gotta unlearn everything they taught you about money. So go to flirtingwithbitcoin.com and train your brain to think in Bitcoin with the Satoshi Savings Calculator. The example I kept giving them is like on the drive between the airport and Bitcoin Beach, there was a bunch of signs, but there was a really big one that was like this big condominium tower that was being built on the beach somewhere. And it was like houses are starting at $200,000, right? Okay. To someone who lives in Washington, D.C., that sounds really cheap. Beachfront property in a high rise for $200,000, that sounds really cheap. $200,000 to an El Salvadorian, from what I can tell, is a lot of freaking money.
Yeah,
right?
I would think so too.
Okay. They're not getting no mortgage for $200,000.
Mm-hmm.
So who is that being marketed to?
Bitcoiners.
Not Bitcoiners, just people with money.
Okay.
Right? Like if you have the ability to acquire $200,000,
do that.
By all means, buy this condo on the beach. So I kept using as the example, like, well, what if we put that price in Bitcoin, right? And what if every day you drove to work, you drove past that sign, the $200,000 number stayed the same, but that Bitcoin number kept getting smaller mm-hmm. and smaller and smaller. If you could actually train your brain to start saving in that bottom number, you would actually eventually rise and meet that price. So maybe you don't have the 4 Bitcoin that it would be today, but a year from now, I'm assuming that sign will still be up, it's 1 Bitcoin. And then another year from now, before they finish building the building, mm-hmm. it's 0.25 Bitcoin. And you don't have 0.25 Bitcoin, but you got 0.1, right? So like things don't seem out of reach forever. Things actually can appear obtainable if the price is constantly coming down.
It sounds like what you're saying is that time needs to pass.
Time needs to pass, but things need to start being priced in Bitcoin. If El Salvadorians, just the Bitcoiners, right? If you just start putting the price of Bitcoin next to everything, it will click.
But and that was one of the techniques you used to explain Bitcoin to El Salvadorians.
I was trying every mental jujitsu trick I knew.
So which one's clicked?
That one definitely clicked. I'd try to punch it up a little bit, and I'd be like, yeah, it'd be like this Bitcoin number. And now housing prices and everything has to be, you can't have a static number anymore. It all has to be like gas stations, right? Because it's changing every day. So you're on your drive to work and, like I said, it's down from 4 Bitcoin to 2 Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. Okay, right? And then it's down from 2 Bitcoin to 1 Bitcoin or whatever. I was like, and then just to like, really punch it up, you just put Bukele with like the finger guns pointing at the price, right? It's like, not that price, this price,
yeah.
Right? Because we're not telling you which one to do, but like, have you ever seen the price of housing go down?
Yeah.
Anywhere ever in the world? If there's a housing crash and prices come down, but like naturally, no, that doesn't happen. And so that was the example that I was using, and that really registered. But at the same time, it's like, yeah, but like, I got to earn money and I got to live and I can't even save anything. And I was like, that's not true. You can always save something. Right? Like, I don't know how much you make or whatever, but like, you can always save something. And if you can't, then yeah, you're right. None of this matters. But hypothetically, if you're just using time to your advantage, if you're taking in Bitcoin or you're taking in dollars and you're just converting it all to Bitcoin, unless you're spending all your money every day, some of that is going to start accruing.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Right? Some of that is going to start accruing. You might end up spending all of your money. But
hey, it goes up within a week.
If it shoots up 10%, it's like you had to work 10% less.
If your rent is due in 2 weeks, it can go up in those 2 weeks while it's sitting in your Strike wallet.
It can also go down. But the point is that the point is that in the last like 365 days, it's gone up 100%, over 100%.
Really? That's the talking point now.
I mean, it will be the talking point for a while, but like it's gone up more than 100%. It went from 15 to 45. That's a 3X.
Yeah, I just continually find it so fascinating as someone now who I think gets Bitcoin, right? I don't know if that's your characterization of me now, but it's so fascinating to me at what will drive Bitcoin adoption in waves. And now, of course, there are varying degrees to Bitcoin adoption. I understand what Bitcoin is. I have a little Bitcoin because the government gave me 30, 15 bucks in Bitcoin. I prefer to use Bitcoin I prefer to save my money in Bitcoin. There's so many different stages of Bitcoin adoption for people. And I'm just so fascinated like to look back maybe 10, 15, 20 years from now to be like, yeah, that's what sparked one of those waves. That's what sparked those other waves. That's what finally got like, people like so-and-so friends of ours to get it,
Yeah. I think the biggest way to really get people to get it, this is just what's been happening, is that somebody who you had an argument with about Bitcoin and then 4 years later, they turned out to be right.
Mm-hmm.
You can either admit that you were wrong or you can wait another 4 years, but you're not going to be less wrong in another 4 years. So then it just becomes an ego thing. Like you're just going to like really be butthurt about how wrong you were and never buy it to prove a point.
That's the medical term, butthurt.
While you're while this person that you obviously lost an argument with is becoming basically a millionaire in front of your eyes.
Oh my goodness.
Right. So, little side note, like one of the people I was talking to there wasn't a El Salvadorian and wasn't a Bitcoiner. And actually there's a lot of people that were at Bitcoin Beach that were not El Salvadorian. And
what
not
countries
Bitcoiner.
Were they from?
It doesn't really matter. Most of them were for Canada.
Oh, right.
But like just in general, like a lot of people are just there to surf.
Mm.
And they don't care about this stuff. Mm. And I met this one guy, smart guy. He's a surfer. And he was like, yeah, you know, I don't really care that much about money. You know, I just kind of work so I can like whatever, you know.
Catch the waves
or whatever. And he had actually been down in Costa Rica in Uvita.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had my Costa Rica tank on mm-hmm. and he saw Uvita. He was like, oh, have you been there? I was like, no. He was like, oh, I live there. And I was like, oh, cool. Right. So you're in Uvita in Bitcoin jungle and you don't know about Bitcoin.
Yeah. And now you're in Bitcoin Beach.
And you don't know about Bitcoin. Right. So like there's this overlap yeah. of surfers and beach. Oh, and beach.
Maybe that's the industry to unlock for us.
Surfers and Bitcoin are living parallel lives.
Yeah.
They're looking for the same things, right? So this guy, his name was Steven. He said this to me. He was like, you know, I don't really care that much about money. And I was like, yeah, I'm not saying you have to care about money, but like, you know, that part you said, how like you just kind of work a job so that you have enough money to go surf at the next place. Like, what if you just had Bitcoin that was appreciating and you didn't have to work that job?
Mm-hmm.
And you could just say, well, when Bitcoin hits this number, I'm going to my next beach. Maybe it's 2 years from now. Maybe it's 6 months from now. Who knows? And he kind of just sat there and was like, what?
Did you tell him about the pod?
Of course I told him about the pod. But
hopefully he's listening. Hey.
But I tried to tell him. I was like, look, you know, when I got on the plane, Bitcoin was $48,000. When I landed after getting service back, it was at 52.
How did you feel when you saw that?
I was
let's go. That's what Ian always does. He just shows me he puts his phone in front of my face and he waits a few seconds for me to see the number and then goes, let's go.
I mean, what are you going to do? Like, so, you know, I'm like, okay, $4,000 no knowledge of Bitcoin. He understands an appreciation of $4,000. And I'm sure $4,000 to a surfer is a lot of money because, you know, I don't care about money. So $4,000 is probably a lot. And he was like, really? And I'm like, yeah, Bitcoin paid for this trip.
Mm-hmm.
But you gotta learn it, you gotta save in it, and then Bitcoin will, it seems like it's paying you, it's letting you retain most of the fruits of your labor versus having to constantly work some menial job to get to the next beach. And I think I made it through to him, but he was definitely like, I just here to surf, you know, whatever. But we had a great convo. You know, I had a lot of other conversations with people that were like just there on vacation and not knowing that they were at Bitcoin Beach and not knowing about Bitcoin and not knowing about what's going on. And at the end of all of it, they were all just like, wow, like, thanks for like telling me all this. I didn't know. I'm going to have to like look into some of this. And I'm like, yeah, like I'm here because of that. You're here because of that. And you don't even realize it. I said this to this one woman. I was like, you're here because of Bitcoin. And she was like, what are you talking about? I was like, why did you come here?
Like visiting El Salvador is a new thing. It's not like Costa Rica. We've been going to Costa Rica for years. And,
you know, I was like, why are you here? And she was like, oh, you know, like one of my friends, she's been like posting a lot of pictures from here. I was like, why is she here? Oh, you know, like she's like whatever. And I'm like, yeah, but did she feel safe here
mm-hmm.
to post that she would like, she felt safe, right? It's like, yeah. Why did she feel safe? Because the Bitcoin president got rid of all the gangs.
The Bitcoin president.
The cool Bitcoin president got rid of all the gangs. And so you got the guy that got rid of the gangs. He's the same guy that's trying to bring in Bitcoin.
Do you think these conversations that you had with people really were eye-opening for them? Or were they just kind of like having, they're on vacation, they met someone who seems interesting, they're just chatting with them?
I think that every person that I talked to for more than 15 minutes, it was eye-opening.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're actually in it. I'm like, do you know this place is called Bitcoin Beach?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Like when you booked your hotel on bookings.com, did they say, come stay at Bitcoin Beach? Or did they just say El Zante? You know, it's like, well, why is it called Bitcoin Beach? And I'm like, because I haven't spent a single dollar here. Oh, I thought Bitcoin was like a thing, you know, that doesn't really exist. It's like, no, I've literally paid for everything in this town with Bitcoin. So whatever fudge you heard, like we can go walk around town and do it right now. What do you want to do? You want to buy some pupusas? The little lady in the shop that doesn't speak English, you say Bitcoin, she whips out her phone. Boom. It's an international word. It's not an English word. It's not a Spanish word. It is an international word. You say Bitcoin, and that basically means I would like to give you some money. It's not Apple Pay. It's not, you know, it's not like Zelle. It's not Venmo. Venmo doesn't exist everywhere. PayPal technically doesn't exist everywhere.
Bitcoin exists everywhere. So we haven't actually really talked about your trip, but it's, you know, it sounds like you talked to a lot of people.
Yeah, a lot of people.
A lot of characters.
I think everyone who's a Bitcoiner in El Salvador is a character. You kind of have to be, right?
Who was the main character? Ian. Ian was the main character.
I mean, you know, people were excited that I was there. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. But I was more excited to meet the people that were there. You know, there was Ronnie and Jamie at the Bitcoin hardware store. There were a couple of people that I met that were part of that Kubo Plus meetup. I met the guy, this guy, Papusa G. He won't tell me his real name, but I'm going to find it out. But the most interesting character was this guy, Napoleon, who is, he's got a taxi service. It's called BitDriver. His website is bitdriver.com. But he drove me up to San Salvador and he drove me to the airport to come back. I think he's really indicative of what Bitcoin can do for El Salvadorians. Because basically, like, he was just driving for Uber and picked up some Bitcoiners at the airport and the rest is history. So if you get it and you're in El Salvador, you have such a head start. So I just think there's a lot of opportunity there. And to your colloquially calling them the characters, I think you got to be a character because you're trying to take advantage of that opportunity. And pretty much everyone there is probably telling you that you're crazy.
All right, babe, I wasn't on this trip with you. How different do you think this trip would be if I was with you?
Very.
Very. You wouldn't have explored as much?
Nope.
Yeah, yeah. So it's good that I'm coming on the second trip to El Salvador.
I got, like I said, Napoleon drove me up to San Salvador. And the reason I wanted him to drive me there, because I wanted to actually see San Salvador and like neighborhoods in San Salvador. So when we go there in April, maybe I could be like, hey, let's run up there and I'll show you.
Yeah.
You know, what I think would be interesting. I don't think we could
place out.
I mean, I don't think we could live there like all year. But like if we were to spend like a month there, mm-hmm. We would definitely have to stay in San Salvador. It is too hot in El Zante. Like it is. Oof.
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 It is hot.
Well, hold that thought, babe, because you know, I love a cliffhanger. So how about next week? You tell us all about your trip, a little bit more about the characters that you met and what it was like actually living in a Bitcoin economy. A couple of days.
Yeah, we're early, but it's here.
Thanks for listening to the show.
Now, let's get you set up on Fountain so you can start earning some money simply by listening to podcasts.
Go to fountain.fm to download the app.
Once your app is set up, search for Flirting with Bitcoin and hit follow.
Listen to our show and episodes from your other favorite podcasts to earn your first Satoshis, which are fractions of a Bitcoin.
And make sure to keep an eye out for our promoted episodes.
You can earn up to 100 Satoshis just for listening.
Pretty cool, huh?
You can use those sats you've earned to send us a boost, like a little payment with a message.
And I swear, we try to respond to everyone.
Every episode, we shout out the top boosters.
To support us or other podcasters with more sats, you can top up your Fountain wallet with a bank card or Lightning transfer from apps like Strike or Cash App.
The easiest way to learn is to get started.
Now, you're all set up for podcasting 2.0.